This is Smart Women, Smart Power, a podcast that features conversations with some of the world's most powerful women.
The National Defense Strategy really focuses us on near peer competitors.
The U.S. government, in fact, increased its contribution to WFP in order to assist.
Everything that we do in space, a lot of it can be applied to our life on Earth.
We feature women who are breaking barriers and shaping the future of foreign policy, national security, international business, and development. The world's fastest growing emerging market isn't a country, it's the world's women. Ponder this. A McKinsey study says if women were to participate equally as men in the economy, it would add some $28 trillion to the annual global GDP in 2025. In 2018, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, or OPIC, launched the 2X Women's Initiative. It mobilized $1 billion to finance women-owned, women-led, or women-supported enterprises around the world. Katie Kaufman is OPIC's Managing Director for Global Women's Issues. I spoke with her about 2X and why women's global economic empowerment is important. Katie Kaufman, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Beverly. I'm delighted to be here.
Let's talk about the 2X Women's Initiative. How did it come about and how does it work?
2X is part of the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. And for your listeners that aren't familiar with OPIC, it's the United States Development Finance Institution. So it's an agency in the United States government with a mission of supporting private sector growth in emerging markets through investment. And 2X, which was launched last year, actually a year and a half ago now, is the agency's first women's economic empowerment initiative.
And why is it called 2X?
We branded it as 2X very intentionally, initially to represent that multiplier effect of investing in women. So when women earn a competitive income, they reinvest 90% of it back into their families, their children's education, their aging parents' health care. By contrast, men reinvest about 30% back into their families. So there's a true multiplier effect of empowering women, and we wanted to capture that in the name. We also wanted to avoid another acronym here in Washington, and we wanted it to be something comfortable and easy for people to say and understand, and of course, the slight nod to the female chromosome.
And it's easy to remember.
Ah, good. Thanks.
Easy to remember. And one of the things I want you to delve into is the reason why women are a good investment. They're a smart investment. Talk about some of the numbers that you have been able to uncover as you've done this initiative.
Perfect. So as I mentioned, they're a smart investment because they bring strong, stable families, strong, stable communities, and strong, stable nations when they're empowered to do so. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the good reason that we think this is important effort from a national security and economic development perspective. But I think the more compelling reason for us to focus on this as commercial investors, OPIC is a commercial financial institution. We put $300 million back into the U.S. Treasury every year. We're a net deficit reduction agency. So when we make a loan in a country, we absolutely have to have that loan paid back. We need to make good, smart investments. And it just so happens that women do just that. There are a few statistics that I think are overwhelming for this case. First, when you invest a dollar into a woman-owned company, she can generate 78 cents of revenue on that dollar invested. Again, by contrast, a male-owned company typically would generate closer to 48 cents of revenue on that dollar. So nearly twice the revenue generation on dollar invested. Similarly, women have lower non-performing loans. They're more loyal customers for banks. They are just fantastic investments all around. And all of these powerful statistics and numbers that have been out for so long, and yet, they have a very hard time getting loans. There's over $300 billion access to credit gap globally for women. Banks require collateral that men control. There's a lot of unconscious bias for banks that when a woman walks in the door, they see her as a more risky investment. Again, even though all the data is saying just the opposite. So there is a myriad of reasons to invest in women from a society and equality perspective, but the data and the numbers are even more compelling from an investment perspective.
Literally, money matters. There is one other number that I want you to talk about here, and that's the amount in GDP that women could potentially add if they were in the economic workforce equally to men.
So this is a number that I think a lot of us in the field hear every time we go to an event, and that is a $28 trillion figure, which if women were to participate as equally as men in the workforce, they would add $28 trillion to global GDP. Now, if women were simply to perform up to the best nation in their region, they would add $12 trillion to GDP. And the reason these numbers are so staggering is because it's not requiring any upfront investment. All it's requiring you to do is empower the very people in your society, 50% of this world, give them an equal playing field, and we will all reap the benefits.
So what are some of the challenges in terms of getting women participating? I know that there are laws in some countries that may be a problem, but talk about some of the other challenges.
So I think that laws are a huge one. There are over 100 countries with laws restricting where women can work and how they can work. There are 18 countries which allow men to decide if their wives can work. So there are some serious hurdles to overcome when it comes to legal barriers. There are some serious hurdles to overcome when it comes to cultural barriers. And of course, the area where I'm focused on is in the financial system and the financial barriers that women face. And those are not excluded to the emerging markets where we invest. We have the same challenges right here in the United States and in the developed world. Some of those are related to unconscious bias. When female entrepreneurs are pitching venture capitalists or other capital allocators to invest in their enterprise, their questions were overwhelmingly be asked about the potential downside. And at the same time, the female presenter is much more likely to be conservative on her estimates on upside. A result of this is that female entrepreneurs get less than 2% of venture capital globally. I mean, it's an astonishing figure given that we create companies at an equal rate as men and we're as entrepreneurial as men. Some of the other barriers, again, are related to access to credit, and those go toward the factors that I mentioned earlier, collateral, unconscious bias, financial literacy that keeps women from even walking into banks. But we are trying to leapfrog those. There's amazing advancements with fintech reaching women through mobile technology, which is going to be able to leapfrog that and, of course, bring down some of that unconscious bias. I hate to drone on too long, but if I could give one quick example.
Sure.
Of how OPIC is working with our commercial financial institutions. And this is really about a mind shift in how banks view women. And do banks understand that female borrowers are an incredible opportunity to grow their client base? So when OPIC works with a local commercial financial institution, we'll provide a guarantee to that bank or a direct loan to that bank. And for the first time since we've launched 2X, we're asking the bank a few different questions. We're asking them to tell us about their clients, the gender makeup of their clients. Women make up 30% of small, medium enterprises in emerging markets. So if our client has less than 30% female borrowers, then they're missing a huge opportunity. They may be missing that because their loan officers are all male. And so they have not only those unconscious bias, but women may be less likely to walk in. They also aren't marketing their products to women. They're marketing their products to men because their marketing team is all male. Or perhaps when they're even creating the products to serve their clients, they're creating them for male clients, and women are different. So we're asking them, listen, women don't want pink checkbooks. We actually want different type of services. We want insurance. We want different products that serve our needs explicitly. So we're working with our commercial institutions on the ground to really focus on growing their female client base as a way to in- increase their business and to become better performers.
Let's talk about some of the projects that are underway with 2X. You've mentioned in before we started talking here, you mentioned that you have been in India and you've seen some of the work that's going on there. So tell our listeners, you know, what you're funding.
So one of the most impactful things you can do for a woman in a rural emerging market is provide her family and her access with clean water. Women across the continent of Africa collectively spend 100 million hours every year just collecting water. And it's a dangerous practice as well. So just to be able to give a woman the ability to have clean water near her home can absolutely change her life and empower her to do other things with her time. So that's a big one. We've invested in a lot of clean water. We've also done direct loans to small women-owned businesses. Women-owned businesses are much more likely to hire other women in their workforce, again, having that ripple on effect. But OPIC also invests in large infrastructure. And when you're building a toll road, there are certain risks that you need to make sure that you're mitigating against to be sure that when you're shipping 200 young male workers into a village, you're protecting the women in that village, giving them a chance at fair employment, seeing that they are actually great operators of heavy machinery. So OPIC is looking across its entire portfolio, not just the microfinance or the clean water, but really every dollar we invest and trying to make sure that that dollar is contributing to gender equitable change.
You even have something called gender lens investing that OPIC is now doing, and that's not just for 2X. That's, as you say, across the board. Can you talk a little bit more about how that came to be?
Sure. So gender lens investing, quite simply, is the practice of understanding gender patterns, calling out gender as material from an investment perspective, including that analysis into your financial analysis to get to a better decision. Mm-hmm. And OPIC has been working very hard to deploy this throughout our agency. We've been getting training. We're trying to understand this across various sectors. The example that I think is clear and easy to understand is perhaps with agriculture, where we invest in quite a bit of agriculture across the developing world. Women sit at close to 70% of the employment in a typical agriculture transaction. And of course, they are sitting at the very bottom of that employment stack. They are close to informal, and they're, of course, paid the least and have the most risk within that employment. And the management will typically be all male. There'll be high instances of gender-based violence and other risks that these women face. And as bad as we know that is, and we want to change that because it's the right thing to do, we also aren't going to be having as high yields and as productive of a business if we don't fix that. So we're working with our partners to be sure that where there's an agriculture practice, we're asking the same questions we always asked for 30 years about risks and opportunities and 3 years of audited financials. And then we're asking about the employment makeup, and we're making sure that that is a safe and productive place for women to work because we want a better return. So I think that's a kind of a nice example for you to really understand how gender lens investing can pull out both risks and huge opportunities just by understanding gender patterns, calling them out as material, and including that in your financial analysis. And I think OPIC has shifted from thinking, oh, we have this women's initiative off to the side, or isn't it good we care about women's economic empowerment too? This is a strategic asset for our investors to understand, and we're going to outperform the market because we have this understanding.
And we're not talking about small amounts of money in terms of what you're investing. You had a goal of $1 billion in terms of investing, and you not only met it, but you have exceeded it. Is that correct?
It is, yes. We are so delighted. We launched 2X and wanted to be very bold. We made the $1 billion commitment to be the single largest financing commitment the United States government had ever made to global gender equality. Funny enough, when we looked back at the previous year's investments, so in 2016, we invested 137 distinct projects, and of those, the number with female ownership was four.
Four.
Yeah, I know, it's shocking. And I think that the lesson there is if you aren't intentional, you will leave this out. If you are not looking for women, if you are not valuing them, they will be left out. But because we did look for them, because we called them out as important and valued them as investors, we just announced that we surpassed our $1 billion target. And since we launched 2X, have deployed $1.4 billion in emerging markets to women-owned, led, and supporting enterprises.
And do you have a number of how many women-owned, led, or supported projects that are actually being impacted here?
So I think we're up to about 40.
So from 3 to 40?
Four to 40. Yes, I think we had a great track record. There was one board meeting in particular where I remember we had four projects in that board meeting that were 2X qualified. And I remember thinking, wow, we really did something.
And you haven't stopped just with it being the U.S. government. You've now gone on with the G7 nations to do the 2X challenge. Talk about that.
So when we launched 2X at OPIC and we understood the magnitude of the need, we decided that we would try to expand not only to mobilize more capital, but also to harmonize with our sister development finance institutions how we defined investing in women. Because if OPIC is defining it as 51% women-owned, and our counterparts in the UK are defining it as, you know, having 20% of the board female. Those are two different definitions. And if we want to help capital markets continue to mobilize more broadly against this target, we felt that we needed a harmonized definition. So first, we went to our G7 countries, which are as diverse as Japan and Italy, the United States. You know, we really are quite a diverse group. We all committed very strongly to this, just this need to empower women. And then we decided we would collectively mobilize an additional $3 billion. And we went about spending the next 6 months creating evidence-based criteria. There's a website called www.2xchallenge.org where that criteria is all very clearly laid out. And also our commitment to transparency and accountability can be recognized there, as we have said exactly where the dollars are being deployed, case studies on who is receiving these dollars, and how far we are along our $3 billion target.
I have to ask, having said all that you've said about the importance of empowering women and the value add that women bring to the table immediately, what has to happen to change the attitudes so that there's not a stumbling block or a roadblock for women who are seeking to be businesswomen and create their own companies or partner with other women and be a team and create a business or some type of business opportunity?
So I think the most important thing is that we all have to have strong voices on this. When I launched 2X, it gained a ton of momentum, and people have asked, oh, how did that happen, and where did that momentum come from? Well, it came from things like Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the generations of women that have been working so hard on this for so long, and then the Me Too movement. All of these things that have caused women to really find their voices and express how valuable we are and be vocal and claim our space. And those sound like fuzzy things, but that is truly what allowed us to be successful. The more concrete things that we need to do are things like hold mirrors up to our own organizations. A lot of companies will say, oh, we really care about this and we want to empower women and here's my little program. Well, if you care about it, you should get EDGE certified. An EDGE certification is like LEED certification for a building that is an internationally recognized standard, comes into your enterprise, looks at it from the bottom up, and helps you ensure that you have an equal playing field for women. And that is something that OPIC absolutely needed to do, because we have very heavily male board and executive leadership team. But we do care. We will be the first U.S. government agency to become EDGE certified. So first is preach the good fight that this is important. Put the mirror up against your own organization if you are going to go out there and say that it's important. And I think the other thing is continuing to collect data and continuing to learn from that data. The data is so overwhelming when it comes to financial systems and why women are so important. I mean, women make 80% of consumer spending decisions. If you're in the finance world and you want to know where to deploy capital and how to deploy capital and you are ignoring who's buying things and how those decisions are made, you're really going to miss something big. So I think as...
And that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. It's I think, over 20 trillion. Yes. It's quite a bit.
That's a lot.
Yeah, in that range of 70 to 80% of those consumer decisions are made by women. Yeah, so I think that as long as those patterns are better understood and people are educated on them, it will be so overwhelming that you need to pay attention.
You mentioned earlier in the conversation venture capital and how few women actually are the beneficiaries of venture capital dollars. I have to ask you, because you are one of the few women, I guess not few, but one of the small number of women who were venture capitalists. That's what you were doing before you were tapped to lead this initiative at OPIC. How did you get into venture capital? And do you foresee that that industry coming on board in the way that you're trying to get other industries to come on board through OPIC?
Yes. So I got into the VC world through my network, which I think we're sitting here in Washington, D.C. This town certainly moves on networks. I happen to believe that the world moves on network. And so it's only natural that most VC firms are their buddies or they met in business school. You know, there are reasons people join together and create enterprises. And a lot of that is based on commonality. So the important piece to that is that when an all-male investment committee is being pitched by a female entrepreneur on a product that she's developing that serves a need that she has experienced, they don't understand that need. They don't understand that market. Time and again, you'll hear stories about how very famous women, from the woman who founded Stitch Fix to Drybar, you know, they're having a really hard time getting capital because they didn't understand the needs that women had, and so they're skeptical about that enterprise.
I've heard Sarah Blakely with Spanx talk about how difficult it was for her as she was pitching Spanx, and then I believe the story, if I'm remembering this correctly, she finally found a guy who ran a factory who had daughters. And he was telling his daughters about this woman who came and pitched him a product and would he make it for her. And when his daughter's eyes lit up, he knew he was onto something.
That's amazing. But see how you have to find that very niche person in that story that has that experience and ability to see beyond his own lens. But I think as these VC firms begin to understand the power of women, they will absolutely need to get men, women on their investment committee so they don't miss opportunities. So I think they'll start to recognize that and that will naturally flow. They'll naturally see that as a strategic asset. But it's going to take us using our voices to explain why that's important.
Well, Katie Kaufman, best of luck with 2X. And thank you so much for being here on Smart Women, Smart Power.
Beverly, thank you so much for having me. It is an honor. I consider myself not very smart and not very powerful, so being on this podcast is a real honor. Thank
you. That's so not true. You're one of the smartest and most powerful women in Washington, so.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Subscribe to the Smart Women, Smart Power podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to good content. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @SmartWomen, and I'm @Beverly Kirk. Thanks for listening. See you next time.